listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. A lot of people are scratching their heads at the announcement made at Apple's Worldwide Development Conference yesterday that the tech giant would build in features into future updates that will curb tech addiction. This seems counterintuitive, but Apple has a habit of making the counterintuitive a way of life. So might this just work? Melissa Westendorf is a bit skeptical. She's a clinical and forensic psychologist and co-founder of Technology Wellness Center based in Wisconsin. She's also the co-author of the 2015 book, Unplug, Raising Kids in a Technology-Addicted World. Melissa, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
So we want to know how you listeners feel about this. How do you feel about technology in your life? Are you too connected? Are your kids too connected? Why or why not? What measures do you take to step away from the smartphone or other devices? 1-800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org. That's our email address. Or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Okay, so Melissa, let's talk about this. Apple introduced a series of tools, this makes me laugh, to fight technology overuse this week at its developer conference. It's an event that's been known for the rollout of the latest and greatest tech efforts. I remember when the iPhone was announced at this. This is not unique to Apple, though. Google does this. They put something out earlier this month. As I mentioned earlier, Netflix and iTunes will pop something up saying, maybe you should take a break. Why do you think these companies are making these moves?
Well, I think there's a lot of pressure by outside groups saying you need to maybe be more ethical in your program making or your product making. I think these are the efforts that they're attempting to help the masses control their use.
So you think this is a grooming thing? This is a, you know, we don't want you to be unplugged by completely stepping away from our technology. We want you to use our technology in order to not use our technology.
Yeah, you know, I think there is some pressure from either parents groups or I think it was a shareholder at Apple wrote a letter. So they're feeling some pressure. And you have to remember, some of the founders of these companies don't let their own children use
right.
their products.
Right.
So they know the problems.
So do you think that this is kind of unethical for them to be policing themselves? Should there be an outside watchdog here?
You know, I think it really needs to be in collaboration with what the research is showing what's happening for people and kids who are overusing technology and how they can integrate that research into their product development.
So one of the top executives at Apple said that these features are being introduced after deep thought about technology addiction. So let's define what technology addiction is.
So technology, I like to use the word one, overuse, because we have a lot of kids who are overusing technology. And I hate to label children as addicts. Mm. But when you look at what overusing technology does to the brain, it's very, very similar to what other process addictions or, you know, say gambling or shopping or drugs, alcohol. They all operate the same way in the brain. And so we can't deny that this is, you know, leading to an addiction or an overuse in the masses.
So if one of my kids, say, starts overusing technology, what changes in behavior am I going to see in her?
So there, you know, we, over the years, as I've worked with people, there are four primary areas that we see. We see some behavioral changes, and we'll see some emotional changes. There's interpersonal changes. And so the compilation of those, so what you're looking at is maybe difficulty interacting with others, pulling away from, you know, social groups or activities that they used to be involved in. We are finding that kids are developing, you know, more and more anxiety issues and depressive issues. And sometimes, and a lot of times, it's related to either bullying online or, you know, that fear of missing out. I think they have a little acronym for that,
yes,
but the fear
indeed.
Of missing out. There's also physical indicators of overusing technology. You know, so it affects eyesight. The blue light that gets emitted actually ages the eye more quickly. And so we're seeing a lot of eye issues. Of course, you know, there's the old wrist and back, you know, depending on what kind of device you're using. Mm-hmm. And then behaviorally, what you'll see is, you know, kids throwing, you know, all these kids want to use this technology. And so that's not the sign of overusing it. But it's when you take it away, how do they manage that? Do they go into rage, like, you know, throwing things around the room, continually grumpy? They're only happy when they're using their device. So there's lots of different ways that you can see this manifest. And it's not going to do it the same way for every child. And maybe it's only a couple areas that you see these indicators. But it definitely affects kids. One of the big things that we see is it really affects sleep. And we all know that sleep is so important to all of us, but especially for kids, because that's when their brain really rests and kind of recharges. And so when they lack sleep, all the other problems that we see will follow.
We are talking about technology overuse in the wake of Apple's and other tech giants' announcements that they are doing things to maybe curb some of this overuse. When you see this, we're talking about games, we're talking about apps and all this other stuff, but TV or stories, let's call them, because we're watching them increasingly on Netflix and Amazon and YouTube. They are addicting too, aren't they?
Yes, you can. I will have to admit that I have binge watched a show or two on Netflix. You know, so yes, because it's an immediate reward, right? There's no commercials. You can go right to the next episode. You don't need to wait for anything. It's a no wait society that we have right now. So that is incorporated into it. Now I see personally TV as a little bit different because it's not interactive, which is what games are and apps are and the phone and messaging.
But aren't they doing them all at the same time? Aren't kids watching things and then texting their friends about what they're watching and checking in with the latest about the star of the show? Aren't they doing it at the same time?
Right, absolutely. And certainly the industry has promoted that. You know, I believe that if you do certain things on Twitter while you're watching a show, maybe you can win a reward, whatever
indeed,
it might be. But yeah, they are cramming all of this technology together because, again, you know, kids have this fear of missing out. If I'm watching the show and I don't know what's going on in social media with my friends, that I am missing out on something.
So you talked about some of the effects on kids being irritated, kind of going into a rage. Many parents of teenagers are going to say, you just described my kid, even when they don't use technology. So what is the difference between young children and how teenagers react, how adults react?
You know, it'll manifest differently, but it's the same process. So what we know in the brain is that it's the anticipation which makes you want to use this device. And so kids struggle demonstrating emotion or identifying emotion. So you might see more of the rage behavior in the younger kids and even into adolescents. But as a person is able to identify their emotions and manage their emotions, maybe it won't be that rage, frustration. You might see it manifest in sadness or in grumpiness or anger, as opposed to destroying the room.
Because I can't get my iPad, because I can't hear my story tonight.
Right. It even serves, there is research out there that even if your phone is off and you can have it turned upside down, whatever, but it's still in the room where you can see it, you will have difficulty performing complex tasks.
Wow.
So it's mere presence is a distraction because we know there's something on it.
And does that mean adults have the same issue? Because a lot of adults, we have our phones right on our desks. We have our phones.
Oh, absolutely.
We cook with our phones in our hands.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this research was conducted on adults.
Ah. So how do we use technology and not use technology at the same time if we need it for our everyday lives?
You know, I think that's what's really difficult. We are, as adults right now, or those with children, are the first generation really having to try to, one, learn the technology, which is much more difficult for us to learn than it is, say, the five-year-old who can program something already, right?
Okay, you know what? Hang on a second. When we get back, sure. I want to delve into that, that maybe this is just something that we're diving into because it's all new and shiny. We're talking about technology addiction and the latest move by tech companies to curb it with tech psychologist Melissa Westendorf. We're going to come back and talk about how adults deal with addiction and maybe how kids think that this is just kind of old hat and maybe don't get as addicted that quickly. It's The Morning Show. It's The Morning Show. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Does Apple really have the power to cure people of tech addiction? Does it really want to? What are tech addictions and how do they affect us in real life? 1-800-642-1234 is the number here at The Morning Show. We want you to call and talk to us about your relationship with tech. Are you addicted? Are your kids addicted? Is your spouse addicted? And what do you want your relationship with tech to be? Melissa Westendorf, you work on addictions at the Technology Wellness Center. We ended the last segment talking about how shiny and new tech is for those of us who weren't born with it. And I will admit, I have to admit this, because I like to talk about my kids and maybe if my kids are tech addicted. Really, my kids take the technology away from me rather than the other way around. So, and I've kind of noticed that they just kind of incorporate it into their lives because they know how to use it. Are you finding this?
Well, certainly it seems like the kids are helping us adults how to set things up and what cords go where. And it's very intuitive.
Cords go where.
It's very intuitive for them because they are figuring it out. You know, you can set, unfortunately, an iPad in front of a three-year-old and he can figure out how to go through pictures or get to the apps that he wants. And for us,
I think order something
adults,
from Amazon. I've heard
and
that,
order
too.
Order something from Amazon. So it's less intuitive to us because we just didn't get it at such a young age, which goes to show you how important it is when you're showing kids new information. They can incorporate it so easily and it's harder for us. But it doesn't mean it doesn't impact the brain is the brain is the brain. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter what era you were born in. And so it impacts everybody the same way. It's just who attaches to these devices, I guess, more quickly or understands them more quickly.
So how much technology should we be using? When should we be using it? Should I be printing out all of my recipes rather than having them on my phone? Talk me through this, Melissa.
No, it's really about the management of your use. So I cook with the iPad myself because it's so nice not to have all these cookbooks anymore, and we're saving trees,
right?
You know, we're doing wonderful things with digital devices as well. But then also, do you have your phone in your bedroom? Do you wake up? Is that the first thing you look at in the morning or the last thing you do before you go to bed? Do you find yourself, I'm just going to look up a quick email and then 30 minutes later you've gone through a bunch of emails? Are you having a hard time disconnecting from work? So it's 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, and are you then at 8 o'clock, because you have the capabilities of having work on your phone, are you still doing work? You know, those are the questions we have to ask ourselves. How do we feel about it? So I had one unique experience that I never anticipated, but I was going through a period of time where I was experiencing periods of dizziness. Hmm. And what it was, I was excessively fatigued. And dizziness is a symptom of that.
Right.
And so that was because I was using my technology too late at night. It affects me maybe in a different way than it does other individuals. So
it affected
I have to
your
be careful
sleep.
About
it
that.
Affected your sleep or it
yes.
allowed you not to go to sleep?
Well, it affected my sleep. So I could fall asleep, but I wasn't getting restful sleep or good sleep. So I was fatigued and I would feel tired in the during the day, but it was really, I was excessively, my brain was fatigued and I was having these episodic periods of dizziness. So we have to consider there are physical manifestations that maybe we can't pinpoint to technology, but if you remove it, do you change some of the physical issues you might be having? And again, you know, that sleep is so important. I strongly recommend no cell phones in the bedroom, no televisions, no computers, nothing in the bedroom for kids, especially, you know, and adults as well.
I feel like that's an uphill battle. I don't know too many bedrooms that don't have a television at the very least. And so many of us set our alarms with our phones. We don't buy alarm clocks anymore.
I know. I purchased an alarm clock for the very reason because I found myself when I shut that alarm off, I'd turn on something, some work, see if I got anything that I needed to attend to. You know, and really we have to take that personal time and say, you know what, it can wait till 8 a.m. in the morning instead of 6 a.m. when I'm getting up, you know?
Are you addicted to technology? Is your kid, is your spouse? Are you worried about what it might look like? 1-800-642-1234 is the number to call. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org, tweet us at WPR Mornings, or you could go to the Facebook page for the Ideas Network. So, Melissa, we're talking about kids and using technology. A lot of parents don't really know what their kids are doing, what they're looking at, what's kind of happening. I remember when the whole 13 Reasons Why thing came up, I noticed some changes in one of my kids and suddenly sort of zoomed in on, what are you watching? What are you doing? And pulled it away from her. A lot of parents will have stories like that, but sometimes parents just see changes and don't know where that's coming from. How can we tell where those things are coming from?
That's what's really difficult, especially if we have adolescents, because adolescence is a time of angst and emotional changes. You're going through puberty, so you have lots of hormones surging. But it's really about observing your child, seeing, you know, taking note of how much technology are they on. If you have instituted the plan of, you know what, you have a cell phone, but I get to look at it whenever I want. You know, that's a good way to look at the children's cell phones. You know, you certainly can monitor cell phones with different apps or devices or programs, although kids seem to know many ways to avoid that. But I tell you, you know, kids are looking at things that you would wish they are not looking at. I mean, you have to accept that as a parent. And then you have to ask yourself, well, what am I willing to accept that they're going to be looking at? As part of my career, I'm a forensic psychologist, and I evaluate a lot of older adolescents and young men who have become addicted to pornography.
Right.
And when I ask them how young they were when they first saw it, people would be amazed, 11, 12 years old. I mean, I think the average age now of a first exposure, not regular use, but first exposure to pornography is now 8 years old.
And that's a whole other show to talk about how pornography
yes.
affects our society and affects boys and how they see girls. But when you see young men who are addicted to pornography, what are they manifesting for you?
Well, unfortunately, I see them as they get involved in the legal system. And so there's a lot of pornography out there that is easy to
wait a second. I'm gonna back up here. Get involved in the legal system for what reason? What are they being arrested for?
Well, because they become addicted to pornography, they eventually start viewing child pornography. So all of this is very easy to find. In fact, there's been a case where someone merely had to Google the words child pornography together, and they were able to find some. So it is so prolific out there. And because when you put this all together, right, you have digital devices that you can become addicted to, and then you put in sexual videos or pictures, which is also another system that works the brain and the reward system. Mm-hmm. And you put those together, it's like a drug addict, right, who is starting with one drug, but then they have increased tolerance. So now they need another drug, and they need to increase the dose, or they need to increase the type. It works the same way when people look at or are looking at pornography. It can work that way if they don't monitor their use. And so for kids who just simply, we have to admit, they cannot regulate looking at these devices and regulating their behaviors, they need our assistance doing that.
So one game that you've been watching that's captured hearts and minds is Fortnite. Tell me what Fortnite is.
Wow, it is probably the most addicting game I have seen that's come out. I think all the kids are playing it. I know in my household they used to play various games, and now they're just playing this game. And it's really Minecraft meeting the Hunger Games. There's challenges, and it's a battle till you win the battle, you know, and there can be up to 100 players in the battle. And it's, you know, the games are about 20 minutes long, so they're short enough that you can get to a win, but it's very difficult to get to the win. So you anticipate. It's that anticipation of wanting to get the win, of wanting to meet the challenge, of seeking out people that's in this, you know, Fortnite land on the island. And it is so powerful. It's amazing.
Is it powerful because it feels great to win? Do they actually shoot people? Everybody is dead, but the winner is that how it works?
It is. It's much
Michael
more cartoonish.
Michael is nodding his head. He's seen Fortnite. Okay, go ahead.
It is. So it's more cartoonish than say some games that have realistic first-person shooter.
Uh-huh. Happy
violence.
There's
characters, funny characters, rabbits, etc. So it's just, I think it's the challenges. It's amazing the amount of money that Fortnite is bringing in. I saw a statistic where I think iPhone or mobile users were paying $2 million a day to buy skins that do not actually make you better. They just make you look different on the in the game. So this is a lot of money is being brought in. I mean,
And actually, in video games like that, most of the money is brought in by buying extras, people buying extra points,
right,
or extra things like that. But what is it? So what is it doing to kids that is making them addicted? And how is this manifesting in terms of their problematic behavior?
Well, again, so remember I talked about the brain, and so you have a release of dopamine in the anticipation of something that you want. And so this game just incorporates a lot of that reward mechanism inside of it. You have challenges you can win. You have guns you can run around and try and find and collect bandages and do all the collection of materials. You can play with friends, and so you have a group of people that you can try and win this battle. So it incorporates a lot of those little things that get that reward system going in your brain. And when you win, I mean, I know when I have children that win, boy, do we hear about how they won.
Wow.
I never used to hear that about if they won a football game,
right,
you know, on the video game. So it really brings together all of those pieces that just keep kids again. And again, it's only 20 minutes per game. So they're short enough that they can get to the win, or they get eliminated and they can start the next game.
What about you, listeners? Are you addicted to a game or some sort of internet streaming site? Are your kids, have you seen Fortnite? If any school teachers are getting ready to go to school and listening to this, how do games like Fortnite interrupt your classrooms? Have you found a happy medium? Do you make your kids put their cell phones in a pocket of some sort on the wall before they come into the classroom? How do you, as parents, set rules for your kids? Call us at 800-642-1234. You can also email us at the Ideas Network or tweet us at WPR Mornings. We've got Jeremy from Racine who wants to talk about teenagers. Welcome to the program, Jeremy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Kind of going off on what you guys were referring to on the Roblox or the gaming community amongst teenagers, and huge driving force in that is with YouTube channels, platforms, communities, things like that, because there is a market for that where you can make money. It's not so much the enjoyment of playing the game, it's getting that particular moment recorded on the gaming as it's streaming live and give it to your audience. And you have young men all around the country, all around the world, at, you know, young ages at 16, 17 years old, making multi-million dollars a year just playing games and streaming it on YouTube. So that's a huge driving force for a lot of adolescents. I have four sons, and they've created their YouTube channels and made a few dollars by subscribers and things like that. So they're kind of, I guess, monkey see, monkey do. They see the money coming in. They want to see if they can make some money as well. And before you know it, you got like six kids in your kids' room trying to come up with that best gaming moment and put it on YouTube and see how many hits they get.
Okay, so now I get, so on the one hand, your kids may be bringing in a lot of money that could hit at some point, right? On the other hand, are you seeing different behaviors from them and their friends because that's all they spend their time doing?
Yeah, in regards to, I want to say, social graces tend to fall to the wayside because when you... I call it game-induced Tourette syndrome. I don't know what it is. Sometimes when my kids get on there, they say and behave in manners that you'd never seen them do it in a real-life situation amongst other adults or a family social gathering or something like that. But once they get behind their doors and they start gaming, the lingo changes. You have to kind of monitor that. I've had so many embarrassing moments where I've walked into my kids and had to settle them down, and it's all being recorded on YouTube, and they actually got more hits from doing that.
Right.
But yeah, when they get amongst their peers, you know, kids do what kids do, and usually when I grew up, we never did those things in the home around the parents or whatever. We always were at friends' houses, at parks, but they're doing it in the house, and you have to really be on top of them because it can get out of control. And the people on the other end of the gaming, there's really no filters out there, and the things that they will say and do to one another is pretty intense. A lot of bullying, things like that. So, I mean, I can go on and on about the online gaming community.
It's
like a culture in itself.
This is fascinating. I really appreciate the call, Jeremy. Thank you very much. Melissa, I just, game-induced Tourette's.
I like that.
I did too, actually. It changes who you are, especially when you're doing it with a group. And also, there's this lure of not just getting an award from the game, but actually making money from being on YouTube and having a channel and having people subscribe.
Right, right. I know I've asked a lot of kids, and when they are done playing Fortnite, maybe they get bored, like they say, after 3 or 4 hours, they will go to YouTube and watch Fortnite. Apparently to learn strategy.
Right.
And then they will go back to Fortnite because now they've learned some things. And it's amazing. I mean, I think that goes to the power of this particular game, that people are watching other people play the game, which I think for a lot of adults or older adults are considering this as what? I don't understand this.
We are talking technology and technology addiction, and we are taking your calls. Melissa Westendorf is a technology addiction expert psychologist, and she will help you when we come back after this break. It's the morning show. I'm Carrie Kaufman. This is the Ideas Network. We're talking about tech overuse, some say tech addiction, and how you can help yourself or someone you love overcome it. With us is Melissa Westendorf of the Technology Wellness Center in Wisconsin, which should tell you that Melissa's bent is to help you kind of get away from technology addiction. We want to hear from you. Have you ever had a technology addiction that you've had to pull yourself away from? What did you do to do that? Do you set time limits on your children or on yourself? Do you sleep with the phone by your bed? 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Right now, Mark from Plover is on the line. Mark, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Now, I have a third grade boy. He's a Boy Scout or a Cub Scout, and we just did the Cyber Chip Award, which is safe use of the internet and technology. And I was surprised, even at 8, 9 years old, how much they were using technology, his Cub Scout members, and my boy doesn't, but I feel like he's almost left out because he's not. And how do I help him hang out with his friends when they're doing all this internet stuff, even when I don't feel like it's the safest thing for him to be doing?
Right. Okay, so first of all, thank you, Mark. This is really good. First of all, I'm really fascinated that the Cub Scouts have a Cyber Chip Award to limit technology, Melissa. But also, Mark brings up a really good point that our kids' social lives are on social media. Often, I will see a group of kids sitting around in the same room texting each other or texting people who aren't necessarily there, and they're all, you know, there may be 5 kids in a room and 10 kids are in the group. And then if somebody doesn't have that technology, if a kid doesn't have an iPhone, then they feel left out because they cannot get in touch with their friends. What do you say to them?
It is really, really difficult, as my son said, but it's our whole world when he couldn't talk about Fortnite with his friends. And I do commend the Boy Scouts for doing that, because really it's safe internet use is what we want to preach to our kids. You know, I think you have to, like I said, find a balance. Of course, you can let your kids go onto the internet or socialize with their friends as long as you're supervising. It's about how much time are you going to let them do that. And so sometimes we have to help them with structure in terms of connecting with their friends in other ways. You know, what can you go with your friends to the library? I know that sounds cheesy, but go to the library park or help structure it so they can figure out how they can have great fun together without being on their devices, because you do have kids who are talking with each other, but they're not together. And we lose that interpersonal piece when we can't see the person that we're talking to. And as kids, they need to see each other. They need to be in each other's presence to really learn how to speak to each other and to see the cues like, oh, geez, what I just said, they don't look like they're very happy, or they look sad. Maybe I shouldn't say things like that anymore. And you'll lose that when you're online. So it is really, really difficult balance. I experience it myself, and sometimes I don't do well with it, and sometimes I do better. But I think with parents, if they're aware of it and they're trying to manage it, they're a step ahead than individuals who are not having it managed at all.
We have Liz from Hartford who has a question for us. Liz, welcome to the program.
Oh, it's not really a question. It's just more of a comment. As being a parent and an adult as an example, you want to try to disconnect from your phone. And, you know, it's like, okay, I'm just going to turn it off for the weekend or for the day. But then you want to turn your music on. It's on your phone. Or, oh, what's the weather like? How you know, it's on your phone. It's really hard to disconnect and be that example of not needing your technology.
That is a great point, Liz. Melissa, it is part of our everyday lives. You know, I was eating dinner last night and something popped into my head and I was like, oh, let me check that. And I had to pick up my phone to check it. It only took 2 seconds, but I needed to know that answer. So how do we deal with that kind of like in and out and in and out? That's, by the way, what my kids will take my phone away for.
Oh, absolutely. We are teaching our kids like, oh, we can get a question answered really quick. What you have to make a conscious decision to take the phone out of your presence. And I've done some of these same things. Like, especially when people are driving, you see people on their phones in their car, you have to put it in the back seat so you cannot get to it. You have to say, we're not going to have any devices in the dining room. And you literally have to take them away. It's this conscious effort to say, you know what, I'll find out what the weather is maybe in 2 hours. You know, I don't need to know right now. Or I don't need to know the answer to that question right
now. But all of our music is on our digital devices. Does Alexa and all of those things, does it make it easier because you don't have to touch anything? You can just say, Alexa, play this.
Well, personally, I don't have any of those devices. I don't want them in my home. I don't want them listening to
that's
anything
a whole other show too. Right,
that's
exactly.
A whole other show.
Right.
But you again, you make conscious decisions. I have music on a good old iPod, you know. So you can make conscious decisions. You have to decide for yourself. If I feel I'm too addicted, then what are the steps I can take to limit my use of it? So I'm going to get an alarm clock for my bedroom. I'm going to get an iPod or some other device for music that I just listen to music. I will not have my iPhone on or Android device, not discriminating here. I will not have that on after 6 p.m. or from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. You can set a structure, much like we do at work. Right. It's just applying it to these devices. You can set that structure up. Sorry.
That's okay. You can call us with your technology stories at 1-800-642-1234. Paula from Oshkosh. Welcome to the program, Paula.
Hi. Thank you. Hi, Melissa.
Hi.
Just a couple of fun stories and then the battle that went in our house.
Oh.
So my husband used to be your boss, and one of the things that happened in our house that I would leave for work, and he's playing a video game, and I come back, and he hasn't moved. And so now that we had kids, he insisted on having every newest device, and that's how he was going to have time with the kids, which I opposed vehemently and instead gave them a violin or sent them to dance class or sent them outside or did whatever else. But I remember traveling on a family vacation, and every one of us was on a different device, I have to confess, but we were sitting in a car together, completely separate.
Is that okay? I'm going to bring up two things here. First of all, is that better maybe than when are we going to get there? When are we going to get there? Is that kind of like occupying them? And also, from a parent's perspective, are you really sure you want your child playing a violin rather than a video game? Just in terms of our ears and our sanity.
Yes, you do.
Okay.
Yes.
Because
yes.
One of my child's violin, flute, and piano.
Okay, one of my children actually plays violin, so I'm just saying I know there are parents who don't want to really be in the house when they're practicing, just kind of putting that out there. But Melissa, do you achieve technology independence by putting more technology in and spending time with your kids playing it, or just taking it away entirely and putting a piano in your room?
No, I mean, like I said, we can lead by example. So let's say I encourage parents to learn how to play Fortnite with their kid. But then in that process, you say, okay, we're going to play, let's play from now until now. And then at that time, you say, okay, we're all done now. You put it away, and they see you modeling, all right, it's okay to put it away. I'm not missing out. And now I'm going to do something else that's not technology related. So these are the little ways that kids are watching us. How to walk away, as long as we can walk away.
So what strategies, in terms of deciding what kind of smartphone you want to buy, if you want to buy a smartphone, how are we planning this out, even before we have kids, in terms of how are we going to approach this with them?
I really encourage, it's very hard to implement the strategies, either the ones in the book or other ones that I've talked about, when you have an adolescent. You can do it, but you are going to get a fight. I really encourage parents or those who are going to become parents to implement strategies very early on. I mean, before the age of two, they shouldn't have a digital device in front of them. Do not give them an iPad when they're in the stroller. Do not give them anything just to keep them quiet. They need to learn to use the toys, you know, the toys where they're feeling things. And then you implement a really good structure as the kids are getting older and they learn, they grow up. This is my structure for my device. It doesn't mean you're not going to have issues at times, but if you can implement that early on, it'll work great. So for really young kids, you know, 5, 6, 7, if you're going to let them use a little bit of educational time, you use an egg timer and you say, this is how much time you get, 20 minutes or I would say 20 minutes. And then they use it and then they're done. And then you help them transition to something different.
So and perhaps in parenting classes, while we're teaching mothers to be how to breathe and what have you, we should also teach them about how to handle technology once their kids are born.
Oh, my goodness. That would be a wonderful thing.
You should do that. Your center
should
do that. We have been talking about the overuse of technology after Apple announced yesterday that it was going to install app updates that will help people walk away. Melissa Westendorf is a clinical and forensic psychologist and co-founder of the Technology Wellness Center based in Wisconsin. She's also the co-author of the 2015 book, Unplug, Raising Kids in a Technology-Addicted World. Melissa, thank you for joining us today.
Oh, thank you so much for highlighting this.
Thank you to all the callers. These were really interesting phone calls today. I appreciate that. Coming up tomorrow at this time, we're going to explore why some doctors don't really tell women what childbirth can do to their bodies. We were just talking about this, why there's a lack of evidence-based information about pregnancy and childbirth and what happens after you give birth in the U.S. I'm Carrie Kaufman, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.